Well, the IRS is doing some damage control. Acting Commissioner David Werfel has appointed David Fisher to the post of Chief Risk Officer and Senior Advisor. His job will be to help restore, quote, the integrity of the tax agency in the wake of ongoing revelations that the IRS targeted conservative groups for scrutiny. Okay, so the road back to integrity might be a long one for the IRS. But Marshall Boswell says the late David Foster Wallace saw the tax agency differently, not just as a place full of integrity, but more than that, as a heroic institution.
All the frontiers are done. There's no more exploring. And what we have now is a culture overridden with data and information. And the people who are helping us sift through it, make sense of it, give it meaning, give it shape, are the new heroes.
Boswell is an English professor at Rhodes College, and he's undertaken a fascinating exploration of Wallace's fictional portrayal of the IRS in his last unfinished novel, The Pale King, which begins in the Reagan era at a time where tax cuts and supply-side economics are transcendent.
He has set the novel in the mid-80s, in the aftermath of the Reagan Revolution. So in the novel's dramatization of this period, the Reagan tax cuts have resulted in huge budget deficits that the IRS is now charged with offsetting through aggressive auditing. And in Wallace's vision, the IRS transitions from being a place associated with social justice and civic virtue, where you contribute to the greater good, and it becomes a sort of enemy of the normal taxpayer, and also a kind of for-profit business,
yeah,
who where the maximum yield is what the agents are now being charged with pursuing.
Now, do we have any sense from Wallace's other writings or interviews he gave why he chose that moment in time to place this book?
He's trying to find year zero for our current political stalemate that we watched all unfold last summer with the debt ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is locating this moment of the Reagan Revolution and the tax cut mania, the belief that tax cuts lead to economic growth and that all tax increases stall the economy. That's at the bedrock of supply-side economics is birthed right there in 81, 82. And we're still living in that moment, and we can't seem to get out of it.
So transformation is one of the big themes that Wallace explores in this book. I mean, for example, the transformation in his fictional IRS. There's also a transformation in one of the characters, at least one of the characters in the book, and that is Chris Fogel. So tell us about this guy.
Chris Fogel is a character from Wallace's own generation who spends the 70s a self-professed wastoid. He lays around, smokes a lot of marijuana, watches soap operas, believes in nothing, has no core convictions. And he stumbles one day into an accounting class where a Jesuit priest who's teaching the class says, "You are called to account." And it's a great little pun and a great moment because Fogel feels as if he's being spoken to directly, and he has a religious conversion and he becomes a tax accountant. He becomes an IRS agent. And he feels called to do this. So that transformation is Wallace's, I think, pretty serious attempt to explore a notion of religious experience as real. How do we engage with the civic world? We treat paying taxes like it's a religious duty. And Chris Fogel represents that theme, I think.
Do you think that by writing that, Wallace was essentially commenting and saying, we should be treating taxes like a religious duty?
I think he is. I think there's a serious appeal to people of his generation, particularly, to give up the cynicism or to cut through it. Because, of course, that is the governing attitude toward Washington right now, and it's a well-earned attitude, which is a cynical pox on both houses sense that nothing gets done and there's no way out of the partisan gridlock. But Wallace, I think, is speaking directly to readers in a very urgent way, asking them to cut through that and see this as bigger than Bill O'Reilly and Wolf Blitzer. This is really about our country and our common good.
You know, Marshall, in thinking about how fiction tackled this idea of economics and society, one of the first names that pops into my mind is Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged.
Mm-hmm.
And that one went on to be one of the touchstone pieces of fiction that conservatives rally around to this day. Do you think that The Pale King could have the same effect for people who maybe take a more liberal view of the purposes of taxation and society?
That's a great point. And I actually imagined that same idea when I was reading the book. And my feeling is it could have had he finished it. Even now, I think it's a powerful book and it engages with a lot of interesting ideas, but you get them handed to you almost like an Ayn Rand novel where people just speak their point. But Rand was a popular novelist because the books are plotted in kind of generically melodramatic ways. They're page-turners, among other things. I mean, I read The Fountainhead when I was 14 without any knowledge of what I was reading, and I remember staying up late just to thumb through it to figure out what was going to happen next. The Pale King was never going to have that kind of page-turning popular acclaim, so its power to change was going to be limited by the fact that it was going to be a naughty, K-N-O-T-T-Y, a complicated, challenging read. But Wallace was also keenly aware of the size of his audience and the intensity with which people identified with him and listened to him and treated him like a guru who was trying to heal us. But I think he was trying to harness that power and do something bigger with it. So yes, I think at some level, a response to a Atlas Shrugged is maybe part of the agenda here.
Now, we can't finish this conversation without talking more specifically about why The Pale King was unfinished, because David Foster Wallace committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And long before that, or at least a while before that, he wrote in an essay about one of his favorite writers, Dostoevsky. And in that essay, he wrote, "To make someone an icon is to make him an abstraction, and abstractions are incapable of vital communication with living people." In a way, I feel like we're doing exactly that with David Foster Wallace now. Do you think that's what's happening? He's turning into an abstraction.
He is. And the work seeks so aggressively to fight against that, to the extent that The Pale King features David Wallace speaking directly to you as a reader, which, of course, is an elaborate postmodern trick. But it is troubling what has happened to Wallace in terms of his image. I remember when this novel was finally published, the first review of it was in Esquire that I saw, and the illustration showed Wallace in a stained glass window as if he were Jesus, right? Mm. And it presented that image not with irony, but as if this is where he is now in the culture, a kind of saint. And I think that's very narrow. I think his work is more subversive than that. But at the same time, yes, he is trying to do something urgently old-fashioned here and make people feel more engaged with their country. So in that sense, he was also courting that kind of guru-like status.
Well, Marshall Boswell teaches English at Rhodes College. We've been talking about the IRS and David Foster Wallace's final unfinished novel, The Pale King. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And by the way, we thought it best to leave you with David Foster Wallace's own thoughts about why he became a writer. Here he is speaking to Charlie Rose in 1996.
What drew me into writing was mostly memories of really fun, rainy afternoons spent with a book. I think part of the fun for me was being part of some kind of exchange between consciousnesses, a way for human beings to talk to each other about stuff that we normally can't talk about.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.